Hello, fellow MS DOS enthusiasts, and welcome to the DOS Nostalgia Podcast, episode 5?
I think it's episode 5.
I think so, too. And as usual, I'm your host, Anatoly, and today, for your listening pleasure, we have a returning guest. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. I'm very pleased to be back. Am I the first returning guest?
On the podcast, yes, you are, most certainly.
Excellent. Cool, and I am Ben Chandler, for those who can't tell from my voice, and it's a pleasure to be back, an absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, let's not bury the lead and, start off that we are approaching a very important date, because a 20th anniversary of a very important event, because on December 10th of 1993, id Software released Doom and changed the world of gaming forever.
Yes, and I think not just the world of gaming. I think the world of computing in general. And,
yes, absolutely.
And yeah, I think you could safely say that they changed the world.
Yes. Yeah, id Software changed the world in 1993. Well, I remember playing Doom for the first time. Do you?
I totally remember playing Doom for the first time.
Yeah, I particularly played through Doom Shareware in one sitting, and I was blown away. I think I remember getting up and back in those days, the old CRT low refresh rate monitors. You kind of zoned out after a while
looking at them. Eyes, and you oh man, bloodshot
your
eyes,
and just massive
eyes.
Headache, and you were so disoriented just getting out of the chair. And that's the feeling I remember after completing Doom. But just at the same time, that's usually like you play a game and you get up and you're like, oh god. But after Doom, I just got up, and besides, I forgot about all of that. I was just like, oh my god, I can't believe what just like happened inside my computer. Like, that's literally was the feeling. Doom in 1993 felt just like somebody cut a hole in your monitor and you were just looking at some other world. Like, that was Doom. And to me now, I just think it's because in a way, like, I do consider Doom, especially Doom 2, like a perfect game. Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and especially at the time, when you look at what had been done with software before and games like that before, suddenly there was an experience which wasn't at all abstract. You know, games at the time always required a fair bit of imagination. Either mm-hmm. you're playing as an avatar and it's a bit like a board game, you're moving stuff around, or, the graphics didn't really immerse you, but suddenly there was this experience that was completely immersive and completely evocative. There was no way that anyone could play it and not go, at the time, not be absolutely blown away.
Absolutely. I mean, everything, all the elements combined together in this, in this one experience. I mean, it was made by a few guys who was really, like, their, first of all, the art style, right? So, id Software had the Wolfenstein 3D before, which, it wasn't realistic, but it went to a realistic environment. Stables, brick walls,
sure.
Nazis, and stuff like this. And all of a sudden, you have that hell and other planets and whatever else. Just weird textures, weird and really grotesquely designed enemies. Like, I remember the first time I've seen a Kako demon, and I was just that's like, I mean, come on.
Man, I remember the first time I saw a demon, and I was like, oh my god, what is this thing?
Yes.
Even the sound effects that they used to make, the sound, the graphics, everything really worked in unison, I think, to make
Absolutely.
A very cohesive experience.
Perfect controls. That's my thing. With Doom.
Absolutely.
Like, to me, Doom was like Super Mario Brothers. Like, you take the controls and they instantly feel natural.
Even a lot of first-person shooters that got made after Doom that get called Doom clones, you play them and the controls, you could never call them a Doom clone. The controls are awful, mm-hmm. The movement feels wrong. Doom feels perfect. It always has.
Yes, Doom always has. They nailed the dynamic, right? Your turning speed is just right. Your running speed is just right. And you, by the way, you ran. Like, you could outrun a rocket in Doom. Fast. It's fast. Yeah. Something that we don't see anymore. But And that, you know, the engine that they created all of a sudden, you know, before you can have sort of Wolfenstein clones or maybe, you know, like Ultima Underworld, you have the sort of little window with slopes and darkness and stuff. But all of a sudden you go into Doom and, you know, the environments are just like, you know, you have elevators lowering and going up, ceilings coming down. You have all those, you go through little corridors and then you go into like an open sort of semi-open places and all kinds of cool stuff.
Absolutely.
Lights all blinking all over. Like you'll pick up a yellow key. Lights go down and imps come out from behind you. You know,
absolutely.
One of the most memorable moments.
I think the biggest thing for me, if you compare like Doom to other games of the time, like Wolfenstein 3D and games like that, is all of a sudden you had really dynamic levels. You know, you went from just mazes with doors to, you know, all these dynamic levels, and they surprised you and they held all these secrets that, you know, it wasn't secrets. Everyone had been used to secrets behind walls and stuff like that. But Doom really made a really dynamic level. And like you said, I think the lighting played a big part in setting the mood. This was all amazing new stuff.
A lot of it was, you know, like in darkness, and you like go in, lights go out, and then you like shoot a barrel, and for a second you like kill a couple of enemies, and you turn around. And really, and by the way, maybe not by today's standards, but it was in a way like a horror shooter. You know, a lot of it was spent, you know, a lot of levels were built around sort of surprising you and you always overpowered the enemies, but at the same time, you know, a lot of it was like going around corners in the dark, not knowing exactly what's going to happen, or enemies coming up behind you, or just teleporting in, and just like little surprises. You know, you step on something, you know, all of a sudden doors open and there's two barons.
Or you pick something up.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. Like, really, really worked well. Like, it was back in the day. Like, now I played Doom 50 million times and I don't really have that response unless, you know, I'm playing some WoD some levels that are I'm unfamiliar with, and those might surprise me. But like standard Doom levels don't have that effect on me. But back in the day, like it was, you know, scary. Like I was scared very often. I mean, it was 20 years ago. But
I think they had this ability to design a level that really felt frantic. You know, they really focused on that feeling of, you know, there's enemies all around you. You know, you're low on ammo of the ammo you like. You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of this? Especially in Doom 2, I find that very true.
Yes, absolutely. Doom 2 is superior, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I think we should talk about Doom 2 later, obviously. But yeah, they had this knack of designing really frantic, fast-paced, sort of panic-inducing levels.
Yes. I love Doom 2. I think maps in Doom 2 are perfect. But we'll get to that, I guess.
We will. I think we'll keep them separate. I remember you were just talking about how you felt when you first finished the shareware version of Doom. And it's funny because I really felt the same way, you know. I remember my brother and I used to play games a fair bit together. And he was really the first-person shooter fan. At the time, I wasn't the sort of guy. I wasn't an action game guy at the time. I was very much a sort of strategy game player, and that was my thing. But he was having trouble finishing Doom, so he was like, I can't get past these two guys at the end. He was like, man, I don't know what to do. I was like, let me play, you know. So I remember we sat there in obviously in the room with all the lights off, because when you're kids, that's how you play, and I still play like that today, you know.
Yep.
And just blasting through these levels, and there's this, I will never forget the way some of the elements work together. The way that enemies walk around and you can hear them opening doors and closing doors used to scare the crap out of me as a kid, you know? Because I was pretty young when I played Doom. I was born at the tail end of 87, so I was pretty young when I played Doom.
Wow.
And, as a little kid, man, that was the most immersive thing, because you know that it felt like, you know, there's guys coming for me. What am I going to do? There's this real sort of panic. And, Yeah, that's really what Doom evokes for me. The design of the enemies, you know, there's guys and they look like humans, but they've also got these crazy eyes and they've got this green hair and they just look evil, you know? And yeah, like you said, the first time you finish, the shareware version where you beat the Barons of Hell and you go into that dark room and you're surrounded by guys and they just blast the crap out of you, like, what the hell?
Yeah, it was a very interesting opening to have you die at the end of an episode.
Yeah, it left you wanting more. I really feel that. They really, very clever what they did there.
Yes, absolutely. It's like, you know, like, you kind of weren't, with Wolfenstein, it wasn't like that. With Wolfenstein, yeah. You kind of just got more of the same, and the best levels are pretty much in the shareware, at least the ones that feel like you're in an actual dungeon.
Yes.
Rather than a maze of mad designer's thought. Doom was not like that. The episodes do, like other episodes do matter. The original three episodes are actually kind of different from each other.
I would say they're fairly different from each other. Yeah. I find them like very varied. Mm-hmm. You know,
And the first episode is just exactly that, a good setup for you to get used to the game mechanics. Cause the first episode is really easy.
Yeah, you play it these days. I laughed the other day because I played Doom a couple of months ago through. I was doing a feature for Dossius Good and I was playing it and I got to the Barons of Hell and I really got that feeling still that I always get. You know, you're coming up to the Barons of Hell and I'm going, oh man, I remember these guys. And I laughed how easy. I was like, man, I can't believe I remember this being a really big moment in the game.
Yeah, all you need is a shotgun and you're done like in a second, which is ridiculous. Yeah, and you can play the shareware of Doom on the highest difficulty, and I don't think in today's age anybody's going to have a problem with that.
Yeah, but it's I think there was this. And also another thing I wanted to talk about is I think Doom was really successful because of the shareware model. You got this amazing, I mean, when you look at the first episode, you look at how much you get compared to like some demos that you'll get of a modern game, and you get so much playing time, you know? Mm-hmm. You get this awesome whole episode to play through, which is a fantastic thing, and it really felt like an achievement.
Yeah, and you know what else you got with Doom shareware? You got multiplayer.
Yeah, so, and that's another really important thing about Doom. Doom changed the world. Doom,
absolutely.
All of a sudden, you know, you could play against your friends with this high energy, sort of fast paced,
really fast, really frantic. Not to mention, also not just against with friends. Co-op games in Doom are really, really good, especially later on when they actually, you know, like when you play in co-op, it adds additional switches and stuff like that for you to sort of. There are some certain things that only show up on maps in co-op mode. So
you're kind of solving puzzles at the same time as you.
Yes, and there's like different, you know, changes happen. So like it's not the same thing just with it. And like I remember to this day bringing the Doom shareware to school. One day to like a computer class, and you know, we weren't doing anything that day, so I just like installed, I just copied it on all the computers. We had the Novell network going, so, and the teacher's like, yeah, do whatever you want, I don't care. So we all just started playing. One guy is like working on documents or some stuff, like everybody else is playing. Well, like there are like 3-4 people,
obviously,
whatever.
Come on.
And like eventually even the teacher joined in because it's Doom and that's what's the time for it. So
man, that brings back a really fun memory of my physics teacher in high school playing through Doom on nightmare mode on his BlackBerry phone.
Yeah, it's well,
he's a crazy guy,
I guess. Yeah, to play on Nightmare,
yeah, and on a little crappy BlackBerry phone. But yeah, Doom was everywhere. Doom popularized not only like multiplayer, but also it popularized gaming. People that weren't interested in gaming because gaming was like, you know, it was solving puzzles and you know, stuff like that. All of a sudden, there was this amazing. I know Doom is what got my brother into gaming for sure, because there was this.
A lot of people where I'm from were buying PCs because of Doom.
Yeah, that's the thing. People were suddenly buying PCs, you know, and you hear stories of lots of businesses where their workers are going, oh man, these PCs are no good for work. We need to upgrade to 486s.
You know what?
All of these.
I wish there were some kind of statistics, but there should be how much, like, the world's output dropped at the tail end of 93 for about a year? Because there has to be. Anywhere I went, and let's face it, Doom was one of the most sold games around that time.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, I think, you know, that's like the first time we started seeing millions of numbers being sold versus hundreds of thousands. And let's face it, I haven't paid for Doom in my life until ways later, and nobody I knew did either. And everywhere I went, like, I remember going to my mother's work, because she worked in an office, and every single person was playing Doom all day. And I'm pretty sure it was the same situation everywhere in the world. Everywhere there was a computer, there was Doom. So if Doom sold, like, millions, it got pirated in, like, tens of millions. I don't know what that is, but it's just productivity must have dropped. Like, Doom is one of those games that I'm sure is responsible for the world's, you know, economy kind of slowing down for a while.
World economic crisis.
Yeah, it wasn't really like a crisis, but like it gotta be, because I don't see what people like had. It was everywhere: universities, offices, everywhere.
Oh yeah,
Doom. Anywhere there was all a computer. Anywhere was a computer that was Doom on it, and. Yeah. It was pirated and was always played by someone. Like, that was the thing. So Doom was that massive of a phenomenon.
I think you mentioned the music. The music for me is a really, really important part of Doom. Remember the music really, really, really well. And I still listen to it to this day, you know?
So do I. It takes away from it, like, with the years, though, with all those comparison videos where you're like, oh, most of them are just straight up rip-offs of stuff. But it's still really good, you know, like... you know, MIDI soundtrack, which is like, it really fitting. Again, in Doom 2, I like Doom 2 more than,
Doom 2 has better music, I think.
And better levels. Well,
and better enemies, and a better shotgun.
That's right.
But I think the real point is about Doom is you can't deny that gaming would not be anywhere near where it is, you know. If it wasn't for Doom, if it wasn't for id Software's, you know, second innovative, or innovation in the first-person shooter genre, I think, for me especially, Doom is the game that defined a whole generation. You know, there was this whole thing in the 90s where consoles, in the early 90s, where consoles were for gaming and PCs were for office work and research and accounting and everything like this. And all of a sudden... On the PCs, we had this game that was way better than any console could ever do. You know, there was no way that anyone could keep up with this new thing that had been done, and it really felt like that's what suddenly everyone was like, oh man, we can play games on our PC. It really turned the tides, I think, from PCs being sort of, you know, there's a fair few games released on them, but they were never really seen as a gaming platform, to all of a sudden, hey, this is a gaming platform.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, gaming, like, all the gaming-wise, it was, you know, that was what exploded the first-person shooter genre.
Oh, yeah.
In the world. Yeah. I mean, there were successful first-person shooters before, including id Zone, Wolfenstein 3D, but that's for gaming. First-person shooters, massive. After that, Doom clones just started happening all over the place. Absolutely. And multiplayer.
And none of them were as good.
Yeah, multiplayer. Everybody had to have a multiplayer mode that pushed the further development of, you know, progression of multiplayer, which to that point in PC gaming, or almost PC gaming, all gaming, was non-existent, basically. Doom was people's gateway to the multiplayer in general. And, you know, that's what started pushing the hardware technology. I mean, we really started seeing what technology is capable of and what 3D is all about. Doom showed us that. So now the next generation of consoles and, you know, all kinds of hardware pushed more towards 3D to eventually end up where we have, you know, 3D acceleration. But we just sort of, you know, everybody was going after 3D. 3D became really the thing, you know. People started talking virtual reality around that time and stuff like that, which is like, we didn't know it's going to take us like 20 years to get there, but that was it. Doom seemed like a gateway to a new world, both, you know, gaming-wise and technology-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think playing Doom was incredibly empowering for anybody, because all of a sudden it felt like we're in the future. you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
By nowadays standards, let's face it, Doom engine is pretty primitive.
Pretty basic.
Yeah, all it is pretty is basic. A 2D, you know, BSP sector map with just heights. That's another thing about it. All the sector parameters are just ceiling and floor height. Yeah. Right? Even the textures, like, you know, in Build Engine, you were allowed to stretch and pan and do whatever with the textures that you want on the walls. But in Doom, for each polygon, it was just top, middle, and bottom halves. Actually, designing levels in Doom was a pain in the ass, at least for me, which is why I never did it, because it was very unintuitive, and you had to define sides by yourself, and, you know, wasn't really user-friendly. However, it knew this, and all of the levels in Doom and Doom 2 are all designed around those limitations. Like, you will never, like, there's no slopes, right? Doom doesn't allow for slopes.
Right. There's a lot of steps.
There's a lot of stairs, and there's a lot of stuff to design those, like, really weird stairs leading to somewhere, or have, like, sort of, like, elevated structures on top of stairs, and, you know, all the doors only open up, so, but you never really feel like somehow it nailed this design where it was new for the levels where you would just go from set piece to set piece. That's what another thing that Doom really established. You know, if you play sort of like pre-Doom fully 3D games, sort of like Ultima Underworld, they don't really have that either. Mm. Doom sort of established that you go in the corridor and you come out and there's this open room that's memorable. You remember, like, how memorable, like, you just replayed it recently, right? So, like, a couple of days ago, or a couple of months ago, or both?
A couple of months ago.
Yeah, and how well do you know all those levels? Like, all those levels, parts of levels really, really stand out.
There's definitely stuff where, you know, you just... It was some stuff just takes me back to being a kid, you know, playing even just some of the textures on the walls, mm-hmm. even, you know, from Wolfenstein 3D where you didn't even have textures on the ceilings, right. You know, all of a sudden you've got these colors and these shapes. I think that really just having that stuff in there, you know, it really builds a set piece, you know, and you know what's coming, but it still feels great.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
When you get into those areas, you know, there's the sort of areas where you walk over a pit of the slime that hurts mm-hmm. you and stuff like that. You're like, man, I remember doing this as a kid in the shareware version.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And the art direction is fantastic in Doom.
It really is. God. Adrian Carmack.
And to think that it was made by such a small team of people, but it's perfect. The sprites, the enemy sprites that are drawn, the enemy sprites that are, you know, retouched, stop motion things, which people think is like the majority, like not really. There's only a few stop motioned enemies really, and the rest of them are just, you know, like pixel drawn, which are like amazing art, and they're creepy, they're weird, they move like in an interesting way and stuff like that.
I actually recently did an art workshop, and they wanted you to take inspiration from a thing and sort of run with that. And I kind of ran with demons from Doom, particularly the Baron from Barons of Hell, because they really stick in my mind as something that freaked the hell out of me as a kid. You know,
and they were tough enemies too before they added Hell Knights in the other game.
Yeah, the Hell Knights are basically diet Barons of
Hell. Pretty much. I do like them more because I can dispose of them faster. but yeah, like all those... basically, and you know, Doom was, you know, like very Aliens inspired. So there's slight H.R. Giger things going on in textures here and there.
You got slime and weird shapes and weird colors. Yeah. I think you look at the muscles of the demons, they're this freaky kind of exaggerated thing, and they really high contrast color palette really lends them this air of freakiness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at like the demons, the various demons, you know, you've got this big creepy eye floating at you covered in horns, and you're like, holy crap.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's one of the freakiest looking monsters.
Yeah. And they ever. Get right in your face.
Yeah, and they do in the, you know, when the death animations on the enemies, like they're just, it just like melts, it just like pours out when it dies. It's just like so,
you know,
felt so graphic for the time.
me a little bit was the Cyber Demon's death animation, because it seemed a little
I assume it's one of those stop motion animated enemies.
And he's like this,
clearly
he's got the most hit points. You put like, I think he's got 4,000 hit points.
I don't care. Yeah. It's all in the BFG. Or a shotgun. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. Like, I don't have problems with cyber demons anymore. Back in the day, we discovered circle strafing, and that's it. That was the end of everything.
Never looked back.
Pretty much. It's that. Like, Doom really also put, you know, the mouse control, like, you can control a mouse. If you wanted to be good at Doom, you played with a mouse. Doom is amazing. Between maps, sounds, music, and everything else, Doom, to this day, is a very cool game to play. Yes, it might be antiquated technology-wise, but because it knows how to use that technology so well. It's like, you know, again, I always liken Doom to, like, the first Super Mario Brothers, right? To me, is like a perfect platformer. It's basic yet perfect, you know? It doesn't have all the advancements that they had, the few advancements that the platforming genre side-scroller had, yet you know, but you know they... You know the controls, you know everything feels perfect, and the levels are just perfectly designed around that technology. So Doom, to me, is that. The controls and the technology and the levels are perfect for that sort of experience. And that experience is not going to go anywhere. Like, I'm sure you put somebody who hasn't played Doom ever in front of it, and you know, once they get past the really low resolution and everything, they'll get into it because it's just that good of a game.
Yeah, I think even, you know, with the indie game resurgence of like pixelated graphics, look at Minecraft.
Absolutely,
there's an insane amount of people playing Minecraft. I think like there's never been a better time to get people back into Doom.
Yes. You know, and there's like a million and a half source ports, so
you can play all sorts of versions of Doom now.
Play Doom the way it's intended. Play it with a nice source port that allows you to make the resolution higher, but leaves everything else the way it's intended to be.
Yeah,
because that's absolutely what Doom is about. You know, Doom is perfect. You don't really need to improve on it.
As we said before, you know, it's a very cohesive experience between the sound, the art, the gameplay, and the level design, I think. And Doom doesn't really need I love games with story, but I don't think Doom really needs a story, despite having the Doom novel, well, the first one, and I just recently ordered the second one, because Doom makes its own story, you know? Doom is about the experience. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for me, Doom is a story of my childhood, you know, playing this crazy, explosive, dark sort of... It wasn't afraid to be violent. It wasn't afraid to be sort of dark. I think Tom Hall was originally working on the game and actually left the project.
He got bumped off it because he was also pissed that they didn't use any of his... Well, he kept writing designs, and Carmack was like, "We don't need any designs. You shoot things. We never had any design documents before. Why are you writing this design document?" And it's true, because Doom really, you know, if you read the Tom Hall's Doom Bible, is available for download. It has been for quite a while now, and you can download it and read it. And yeah, it's kind of it looks and sounds like Half-Life.
Didn't Carmack say to him at one point, "Nobody watches porn for the story"? Or
yes,
something like
that's
that.
that's where it comes from. And you know, and if you play the original Doom alphas, you have those things where it's like poker table with Marines standing around it. But none of that ended up in the game. And that was for the best. Doom is good the way it is. So
Doom focuses less on like this world building experience and just lets you play, you know. It's don't think about what you're doing, think about survival.
Yeah, just it's better off that way.
I think so. Absolutely. No disrespect to Tom Hall, because let's face it, he's worked on some amazing stuff, but
which, by the way, has also there's a GDC talk with that him and Romero did about Doom, which is also really interesting. It's in a GDC vault somewhere, so people, cool, check it out. Doom was one of those games that famously allowed for customization right out of the box, kind of, but not really,
kind of.
That no tools were provided, and everything had to be hacked, and it did. Like, everything got hacked. People made their map editors and everything. Basically, what Doom provided you for, you could you know, you could sort of attach a different bank of data with your levels and graphics and sounds, and it would load on top of the original game, and you could play your own games that you made with the tools that you created yourself or got from somebody else. That's basically the level of customization Doom allowed. Which people say now, it's like, oh yes, it allowed for customization, but in reality, it allowed for very little.
It was very sort of homebrew dev.
Yes, like, it was targeted to people who, I mean, I guess it was more to the point where, like, other people would figure it out and make their own stuff, but yet it was easier for them to distribute it, you know what I'm saying? Like, you didn't have to hack anything to run a PVAD. You just had to, you know, run the game with a parameter. But if you wanted to make one, it was, you know, a lot more to it than just, you know, grabbing some tools and doing it, because there were no tools.
But it was the 90s, you know, you had the demo scene and everything like that. People were really good coders.
Oh, of course. There was like
bedroom coders were crazy in the 90s.
All right, so we wrapped up in Doom. Play it. If you haven't played Doom, please do. I hope everybody who's listening plays it.
If you are listening to this,
you can easily download the source port. If you
know about the podcast and you haven't played Doom, there is something seriously, something has gone wrong with reality.
And you don't have to pay for anything. Just download the shareware, download the source port that supports you for. It runs on everything. There's a Doom source port for everything. You can run it on literally like a digital camera. If your digital camera is good enough to have a good display and like some kind of a digital processor. Have you seen those, by the way? Doom running on cameras, literally?
I never have.
Well,
man,
Doom runs on everything. It's like Tetris. It runs on everything.
Man, my physics teacher played through it on nightmare mode on his BlackBerry phone
in
like 2003.
I can't imagine that.
No, neither can I. I'm not interested. But he finished it. I remember being in class and when he finished it and he was like, yes! And I was the only person in my physics class to pass that year, by the way.
Wow.
He was a really bad physics teacher.
But the thing is like, anyway. But of course, for the best experience, get it on PC, play it with keyboard and mouse, as high resolution as you can, while preserving the original graphics. Z Doom, of course, is recommended. Or GZ Doom, basically. So that's that. And everything supports the shareware. So
if you haven't got a computer that can run Doom, seriously, you can buy one for $10. I promise you. I've bought a PC that can run Doom for $10.
Okay, if you don't have a computer, so I don't know what you listen to this on. Possibly your phone. So your phone.
You can run it on your phone.
Your phone can run like 10 copies of Doom. Because let's face it, like, Doom came out with like all this amazing technology. Okay, the phone that you have in your pocket is about 300 times more powerful than any computer in 1993.
Hell. No matter what phone you have, it's at least got 1 gigahertz, which was
that's
a
what I'm saying. It has more power than the fucking supercomputer in 1993. So
do you remember when they got the first 1 gigahertz computer? I remember them writing about it, and I was like crazy.
Yeah, of course. So your phone has more computing power than Doom will ever need, and Doom is very tightly programmed. That's why it runs on everything.
It is, and Karma is a programming genius. There's no other way of looking at it. Shall we move on?
All right, Doom 2, commercial, retail, box, kind of.
Yeah, for a change, it wasn't shareware.
And by the way, Doom music, don't play it through Adlib. Every time I see a video on YouTube that plays Doom music through Adlib, which happens to be most of them for some reason.
Yeah, they got this obsession.
I just cringe. I love Adlib to death, but this is not the way to play that Doom's general MIDI soundtrack. Oh my god. I mean, basically the Roland SC, right, is what Windows has been emulating since Vista
forever,
basically.
It's been like
this
10
is
years or
and
so.
This is like your preferred way of basically listening to the Doom soundtrack. It's built in. Just use your general MIDI output in your DOS box or your source port.
Basically, don't change anything.
Yeah, don't do it. Why people feel... Because that soundtrack, I'm sorry, Adlib, I love Adlib, but this soundtrack is not made for it. It just sounds so shitty. It sounds shitty on Adlib.
It's kind of weak.
If I see a video on YouTube, I will be tempted to comment, but I'm above that. But just know, if you're listening, if you're about to make a Doom video, you're going to put it in Adlib mode, just don't. Don't. I'd rather hear to the PC speaker. Did you ever play Doom with the PC speaker sound? Oh, it's ridiculous. It's like playing Commander Keen. That's what it sounds like.
fond of PC speaker sound, but I haven't tried that. I should
yeah,
try that.
Doom sounds best at what it's made for. Sound Blaster and, you know, Sound Blaster compatibles and some kind of a general MIDI compatible card. So, yeah, there's that. So, Doom 2 is basically the same game. You wouldn't be able to get away with it nowadays where you're like, 2, and it's all the same. Engine, exactly the same. All right? So, not a thing in Doom 2 have changed technologically. Content...
They added one gun.
Mostly the same. Surprisingly, they only added one gun. The best gun ever. The good old double-barrel shotgun. Super shotgun is the most amazing weapon that just about everyone sticks in for the most part. Sticks with.
Yeah.
And more textures... 32 levels altogether, and they essentially doubled the enemies, including some of the most memorable and most annoying things, like the Arc Vile.
Oh man, everybody hates those. They are annoying.
Not only they look freaky and they run around fast, set you on fire through this line of sight, so there is no way to get out of it except for hide behind the wall. And they resurrect other enemies if it wasn't bad enough. So
They just look freaky. They got the rib cage sticking out, and it's
all the monsters in Doom look freaky. All the new additions also look freaky as hell too.
Pain
elemental that explodes in the more. That's more of a beholder thing, I guess.
It explodes
in the explosion of lost souls, and he also shoots lost souls.
Yes, he does, and that is annoying. Man, if you're not watching, if one sneaks up on you, you can be surrounded by lost souls
and then, of course, you blow it up, and you still have to clean up afterwards and stuff like that. So, yeah, the new enemies in Doom 2 are great, and there's so many of them.
It really is. Man, it blew me away when I played it. I was like, when I started playing...
Mancubus, come on.
Yes.
And has the best death animation where it just drops dead with as it falls apart. Doom, for low resolution sprites, and none of them are more, I forget, because I used to edit Doom sprites. I really want to know now how big those sprites were, because they're not set in length. They're all different sizes, but they're really, really tiny. They're tiny,
yeah, they're
tiny, tiny,
sprites.
Tiny. And in that sort of, in those low res sort of sprites, they have amazing amount of detail for death animations, like the way Mancubus just splits and his ribcage starts sticking out, or like the chain gun guy just like splits in two and stuff like that. They have animations for just a death and a rocket blowing them up for for the monsters that are human looking that just jibbed, like the if you hit your regular the zombie guy or the shotgun guy with the rocket, it will just eviscerate them into a gooey pile of stuff. So
I think
good.
My brother and I were talking about this a fair while ago. You know, Doom's got these really blocky sprites, but I think that's kind of what makes them creepier, because a lot gets left up to the imagination, and you just see these guys, and there's blood everywhere, and you know, these 3-pixel ribs sticking out. I think that really sort of contributes to the atmosphere. You know, I remember being freaked out by Doom guy's portrait when he gets hurt and his face is all bloody.
Oh yeah, we haven't mentioned that was it was basically, you know, Wolfenstein did the same thing, but somehow Doom guy just looked realistically, because he just glanced from side to side. He actually turned from the side that he was hurt on.
Yeah, he does. He looks around
he didn't just bleed or look weird and beat up like BJ Blazkowicz did, but it looked like he got the shit kicked out of him. Yeah, like when he's about to die, his nose is going, he only has one eye sticking out. He's just kind of looking to the side and stuff like that. And he also has this different expressions, like a smile or a surprise, you know, wide-eyed open, mouth open when he's huh?
Yeah.
When he just
I got hit with a rocket.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
And when you pick up the invulnerability, His face goes crazy.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's great. And so Doom 2, more enemies, one more weapon, 32 really really well 30 really really cool maps.
Also, and 32 silly ones.
Yeah, and two Wolfenstein ones.
I mean two Wolfenstein ones. Which,
yeah,
I
which by the way, best gameplay, best my favorite multiplayer map, map 32. Just
okay.
Just kill.
I think with Doom, I think it's really brave what they did, but also really smart. You know, instead of trying to redo everything, and you know, they did the smart thing where they go, you know, we've made this amazing engine, we've made this amazing system. Let's use what we've already made and just expand it and really focus on amazing, amazing mm-hmm. levels.
Absolutely.
And the levels really are sensational.
Levels are more difficult, yet better looking and just more engrossing. You have less confined spaces. Like Doom 1, once in a while, especially, you know that feeling where you go from like, once in a while you get stuck in a closed space in Doom 1 and you were like, ah man, and especially now, back in the day it wasn't as different, but now you're like, oh my god, now it's kind of like I'm back in Wolfenstein for a little bit. Doom 2 had none of that. Not to mention, Doom 2 is supposed to take place on Earth. It looks nothing like Earth, and they never
like
really tried except for that one map.
The downtown map.
Yeah, but it looks silly. And I think the only addition for that, the difference is there's water that does not hurt you. That's what Doom 2 brought to level design, which is weird. But oh, the maps are amazing. I love those maps. They're so good.
I think a lot of times with the maps, they just wanted to have fun, you know, like you had stuff like tricking enemies into fighting each other. Like you get faced with impossible odds and, you know, get the enemies to fight each other, or they spring traps on you. There's all sorts of just fun things going on.
Absolutely. Well, it all comes from, like, you know, the first game was ready and everybody played it and they played it, and the what needed to be refined obviously came up from that. What, you know, everybody understood what, because when Doom was getting made, I guess not, you know, I don't think, you know, once they sort of figured out their artistic direction, that's where they went. But for a while, they were just experimenting with things. With Doom 2, it was clear what needed to be done for it to be fun, because it was basically, you know, the same technology and everything, just, you know, it was just an improved first game, basically. So here come the, you know, more monsters, one better gun, because it's kind of funny now, but you know, Doom has a perfect set of balanced weapons and really didn't need anything else.
Think that's one point I was going to bring up. You know, Doom really has the weapon, like Doom really set the standard for what weapons you're going to find in a first person shooter. You know,
there's a use for each and single one of them, and some people some people don't like others, but you can stick to whichever ones you like, and there's plenty
I think it's kind of weird. My favorite when I was a kid was the chain gun, and now I probably use the least.
I never really did it. Just, you know, super shotgun all the way. And
I think Doom itself as an experience, I mean, Doom, the first one was pretty fast and pretty frantic and pretty cool, but Doom 2 takes that way, way, way to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't need more technology to make a more frantic, a more sort of...
Oh my god, and some levels are just so simple but effective. Once in a while, I would like... Doom 2 has some really complex levels.
It
also has some really simple levels. Like, all of a sudden, you find yourself in map 07, you press the button, you come out of the box, and here's this field with like four elevated structures and with Mancubus on all of them. You have you have invisibility spheres and stuff. You kill them off, you press the switches, and just more and more monsters start... The map keeps opening up until anachrotrons, are they called?
That's the one.
Yes, the spiders, mini spiders start coming in.
They're everywhere.
And you just clear out that map and you're done. But it's such a fun map between the invisibility spheres and the mancubus that, you know, they just sort of start shooting at you and stuff like that. Really, really cool design. Map 11, map 14. I, unfortunately, here's the thing, grew up in Russia, didn't speak English, so I know all those maps have actual names. I don't know any of them. So,
okay, well, that's fair.
So there's a, except for maybe, you know, Tricks and Traps and
Tricks and Traps,
the Icon of Sin. Tricks and Traps is actually a really, really cool co-op level, because you can really screw, you can really screw the other person over.
Yeah, man, send all the barons of hell after him.
Yes, and just there's those things where, you know, the near the exit, the columns start dropping.
Yeah, they drop, and you're screwed if those columns drop.
Yeah, pretty much. So you just run like hell to the exit switch before, and whoever, not only you know, because you play the co-op, there's always that thing in the end where who's going to throw the exit switch.
Sure.
That's always that. No matter, even if you're not competitive in the game, it always becomes competitive when you're all running towards the exit switch. Not like it counts or anything. But, you know, that's a really good map, which is really kind of, you know, claustrophobic, close quarters map, really. Yet it still works so well, and it's such a weird design to have those central room with doors that lead to all kinds of different weird things. Really cool.
I think Sandy Peterson really sort of just sat down and said, I want to have fun, you know. I remember seeing, you know, Matt Barton does his Matt Chat videos. Have you seen those?
Yes, I have. Oh my god, I have. I just rewatched one recently with Sandy Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I have.
Did you see him talking about Doom 2 and some of his ideas for level design?
Yes. And I also read the book, I mean, Masters of Doom, and I just re-listened to it. And by the way, anyone, Masters of Doom, must read. Read like a novel, all based on fact. And if you don't want to read, last year they did a really good audiobook that you can get at audible.com for a discount price of $3.99. Or if you listen to any podcast, not like this one, but the big one, the Audible always advertises, you can sign up for a free trial, and you can get the book for absolutely free.
Excellent.
And save yourself $20. Listen on your phone. It's read by, Gordy from Stand By Me. what's his name? He's famous. I forget. I'm sorry if you were listening for some reason.
Sorry, Gordy.
I'm sorry,
Stand By Me.
I'm sorry, Gordy, but the reading that he does is perfect for that book. It's so good, and it's such an emotional book. You really sort of go behind the scenes, and it's very, very factual. In fact, it got sued a few times.
That's what I want from a book.
To remove certain information, but it's structured like a novel. It's not a non-fiction book. It's a fiction book, yet it's all based on fact, and it's really, really good. And also lets you really understand what went on behind the scenes of id in the early days, and then, of course, Ion Storm. It basically covers id in Ion Storm days, and it's excellent. Like, it's good to reread, good to re-listen, really cool. Here's my unpaid commercial for Masters of Doom.
Good. But yeah, I think it really struck me how Sandy Peterson was talking about how he said, oh, my levels are never the prettiest ones, but I try to stick by certain design philosophies. And listening to his design philosophies, I find really inspiring. You know, he has just really good ideas on how you should structure a level and what works in the eyes of a player. I mean, the guy's worked on some of the best games around, you know, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Really talented. I love Sandy Peterson. He's a really cool guy. And, of course, you know, they brought in, at that point, American McGee.
American McGee. Wasn't he a tester on the first Doom?
Something like that. And I just re-listened to it. Yeah. I should have known better. But, you know, he did a lot of levels for Ultimate Doom, which we have not covered yet. But for Doom 2, it's basically... a lot of his levels were there. And, you know, a lot of Sandy Peterson's levels in Doom 1 were based on unfinished levels
by
Tom Hall. So that's probably where the biggest difference in between Doom 1 and Doom 2 happens.
Yes.
So, yeah. So Doom 2, I mean, since it's basically the same game but better, there's nothing else left but to recommend it. Not to mention... Oh, but I love that title screen in the box.
Yes.
That
was painted. Yes. That was painted by the same guy that did the cover for Heretic and Diablo and all sorts of games. He's a pretty well-known artist. So,
yeah, but they don't look as good as the Doom one.
No, of course not.
I have that tattooed across my back on Instagram. If I could afford it.
Yeah, that's a big...
It's so good.
I think... Do you like the Doom 1 box art? I like it.
I do, but not as much as Doom 2. Like, Doom 2 just had something about... Like, Doom 1 had that thing... Again, it was more like, you know, Doom 1 was like metal. You know, here's that guy... Doom Behind, you know, Demon Scrolling Up, something like, you know, yeah, metal stuff, kind of, we're all kids that grew up in the 80s sort of feel. Yeah. That Doom 2, to me, just has, like, more of oh shit feel, kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's got a goddamn cyber demon. It's got a
gigantic cyber demon, probably the most memorable monster from Doom. And not a new monster in Doom 2, like, we knew what cyber demon was, so it just slapped him on the box, it wasn't anything new, and here's the Doom guy, this time without the gear.
Yeah.
Little tiny in comparison. And Doom 2 and stuff like that. So yeah, Doom 2 to me has a better box and title screen. They're the same. So that design to me,
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Music too. Music, I like the music in Doom 2 better. I like everything in Doom 2 better.
Yeah, the music in Doom 2 is really catchy, you know, and in a really fitting way.
And it also has like the some of the levels like really use the quieter themes more. And multiplayer co-op in Doom 2 is more fun because the levels are more challenging. And there's that. And there's a big, gigantic, really difficult boss at the end. I mean, not difficult, but...
well...
Just strange concept, I guess, but...
Which is a really awesome design, by the way, yes. I have to say. I really, really, really love that design. I want, like, a poster of just that on my wall. Because that is one of my favorite graphics. And you see it on the walls throughout Doom 2, and you're like, oh man, what's that? You get to the end of the thing and you're like, holy crap. Yeah,
the background thing. It was a really weird concept where games started doing afterwards. And, you know, Quake did that with that first boss where you had to do something. You didn't have to kill the guy. Rather, you had to do something special.
Can I be honest? I really hate Quake's first boss. It's too easy.
It is too easy, but it's cool that you had to do something special. I mean, what is the last boss any harder? No. In fact, it's actually easier. Just the point of getting to the teleporter. I mean, unless you really want to just start zapping it with all your weapons and spend an hour on it. But, yeah. But, like, Icon of Sin is also really hard, especially in the harder levels, because... Oh, and God forbid you get telefragged by one of those... monsters that just teleports inside of you, and you're like, well
it's a cheap death,
insta kill. You just have to remember where those the projectiles, the skull spawning things. I forgot what the name. I used to remember the name of like every object in Doom, not so much now, the official names. But you have to remember where they land because they only land in a few spots. And of course, you know, once you got the few Mancubus and things starting firing rockets at you while you're trying to get to the top. It's like you better save that invincibility sphere till the last second. By the way, the designs on those spheres, I love those. Like that first time when you like go into the room and it's all dark and you see the blue one on the pedestal and stuff, like just something about it. You're just like, it just looks so weird. They all have different faces on them, but the blue one just had this weird sort of like almost expression, you know. It's just, you know, the other ones have actual faces, like the Mega Health has, you know, like you can see the eyes and the mouth and everything, and it kind of looks like a weird nose. And you know, Invincibility one has like red eyes and stuff like this, but the blue one just sounds, I don't know what it is, it's like a weird expression. It's like it's almost lost or something, you know what I'm saying? Just hollow eyes and like no mouth, and well, there is a mouth, but it's just like I don't know, something about it. I always like that for some reason. Just freaky stuff in Doom 2.
Freaky stuff. I think they're really focused on just getting an art style that was freaky for everything.
So good. Doom 2, recommended. I mean, there's not much really to say about it, except for if
I get the I get the feeling that less people have played Doom 2 than played Doom because it wasn't shareware.
Really?
So, yeah, I think so. I know a lot of people that I know that have played Doom have never played Doom 2. Really? And it's a real shame because Doom 2 is absolutely superior. Yeah.
Here's a public service announcement. If you have not played Doom, if somehow you have, if you're one of those five people who listen to this podcast, five, I hope none, who we spend 10 minutes recommending Doom 1 to, if you're going to pick that up, pick up Doom 2 too. So it's very much worth it. And if you're one of those people that I were not aware of before that played Doom 1 but did not play Doom 2, should do that too. And again, you can buy it and it's available on everything. So there is
that. You can jump on Steam or whatever and grab yourself a copy. It's easy.
So we're going to briefly cover Ultima Doom.
Okay, we can do that.
Ultima Doom.
That's a good idea.
Commercial release. Fourth episode for the original Doom, designed by mostly American McGee.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not as good. I don't think.
Not as good. The levels don't feel that fun. I mean, they're very challenging, actually. Like, they're difficult.
Yeah.
But they don't feel... They don't have the same pace to them.
I think they missed the point where it's frantic, but still, you know, gives you time to think. And I think they just focused on throwing whatever at you.
Yeah, yeah. It's that one to me is not. Well, this is a version that you can currently pick up just about everywhere. But you know, but basically fourth episode for the original Doom. Yeah. Now and it adds the nightmare difficulty.
Yeah.
Which is something I don't know how people play on that. Nightmare difficulty is.
I don't see how that's fun. To anybody.
It's insane challenge because monsters respawn every 5 seconds.
I don't see how anyone would.
And
find
something
that
else
fun.
Also changes. I forget. Do they all have double health as well?
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember.
Or do they do the double damage? Something doubles and they respawn. So game basically essentially becomes impossible. And now it's just like, oh, back in the day it was like I made it to the third level of Nightmare, which I don't think. Well, I'm just saying it was like a bragging thing. Like, oh, I can beat X many levels on Nightmare.
Mm.
So
probably the speedrun scene finds that sort of thing fun. I don't know.
Yes,
I'm not.
Wasn't it
I'm
be
not really
impossible
hardcore...
to play a speedrun on a nightmare mode? I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know. I'm not like a hardcore first person shooter fan. I play all genres, so you know, I'll play on a difficulty that I find challenging.
Well, like Doom, especially the first Doom. Doom is perfect on ultra violence. Basically the second, on the final for the first Doom and in Doom 2, second to last. Basically will give you, especially in the later levels, will give you plenty of challenge and it will not make original levels too easy. Because Doom's challenges mostly come from, you know, the amount of enemies.
Higher
difficulty, more enemies. And on the easiest difficulty, I think, monster's health is halved, changes.
Like
the parameter, one of the parameters for all the monsters or for you changes. I forget.
Isn't it a third or something like that? I don't know. I can't remember.
Could be, maybe something. So don't play in the easy. Why would you play in easy? You are a serious gamer. You person who is listening. So play it on something, you know, decent. Don't be a pussy. Yeah. That's all.
I play a lot of first-person shooters, but I play a lot of every genre, you know, so I don't consider myself a first-person shooter, like a hardcore fanatic of first-person shooters, so I'll never play on Nightmare difficulty because it just doesn't interest me. I've played RPGs on the hardest difficulty modes, but that's different because I'm a nerd.
So, yeah. Doom.
So,
Is that the end of Doom?
I think that's pretty much got Doom wrapped up.
Yeah. That's it.
Which is cool.
We just spent an hour talking about Doom. I was like, we'll spend like 10 minutes talking about Doom. But yes, here it is.
Easily one of the most important games ever, and we only spent an hour on it. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess. We could have... I mean, I can talk for like 3 hours about Doom, but... actually, you know what one thing about Doom, though, I would like to mention? Here's... Because I have a very special relationship with Doom. Ever since I ever saw it, and I had it, can say... bought it because I didn't buy it till years later. It's been installed onto every single machine I've ever owned.
Oh, wow. There you go.
And always has since 94. I have Doom and Doom 2 installed on everything. And I still pick it up and play it often. Let's say, lately less so, but at least once a year, probably more. The other day, because I was preparing for a video, so I decided to, because I play with Source ports, obviously. So I installed them and installed the things in DOSBox, the vanilla Dooms, all of them, and I started out the first Doom and I adjusted the controls, you know, shut off the music, and I adjusted it to keyboard and mouse controls in Doom, and I started out just to test out the controls on a game that I know you know, just like the back of my hand, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a game I'm very familiar with. It's installed on everything I own. I just started up for like 5 seconds to check out, you know, if I need to adjust the controls or sensitivity in the DOS version, and ended up playing for 2 hours.
Excellent.
That's how good Doom is. I know it so well. There's nothing new for me to discover in Doom. Yet it's still, even though it's been 20 years, right? 20 years of me playing that game and having it on everything. Yet it's still, after 20 years and thousands must have been of playthroughs, it's so engrossing that it captured my attention for a couple of hours, even though I didn't even plan on it. That's cool. That's Doom. Yeah. That's my best recommendation. That's what Doom means to me. It's that good. It's that good. I hardly ever games grab me so much. New ones, old ones, anything. Like, it's, but Doom is one of those games, which is, you know, why it's
a classic.
Yeah, it's a classic and one of the best games ever for a reason. You know, that's the reason. It's an insanely good experience. I mean, are we gonna master levels? You play the master levels?
I haven't actually played the master levels.
They're okay. I mean, okay. They're that. And I think they're now free.
Doom has had so many level packs and stuff.
Yeah, released. But there's only official ones. So the master levels is the official one from id. And then you had the final Doom. Two wads done by Team TNT, which they're really difficult. But okay. I really, really like them, and they're even better in co-op. They're really difficult, but they do have that flow. And now with Doom 3 BFG, you get that new one that's done by somebody else. I forget death something. I forget what it's called, and I only played a few levels, and it's also supported by ZDoom. I like it. I think it's a really solid WOD, except, you know, like, well, those first three levels that I've played. So, there's that. Okay, so we're moving on. Already in 1994, there was an offshoot, a different company. It was Romero's baby. He wanted to sell off Doom Engine to other developers. And so, 1994 also seen the release of Heretic.
Yeah, Heretic was by Raven Software, who had previously made first-person role-playing games like Shadowcaster, which was fairly well-known and pretty interesting.
Shadowcaster was interesting by how heavily modified the Wolf 3D engine was.
Yeah, very, very, very heavily modified.
Barely recognizable anymore.
Yeah, that's right. You hardly notice it as the same engine. But yeah, so Heretic is really a natural evolution of this into the Doom engine, I think. But turning it more into a first-person shooter and being an exact clone of Doom with different graphics.
Yeah, here's my thing with Heretic, and I don't know if I'm going to get some flack for this or anything. You might as well hashtag it classic game bashing. I can't stand it. Here's my thing.
Really?
It bores me to death. Here's the thing about Heretic. Heretic is basically medieval Doom, so much so that it's exact. Like, the weapons are basically the same. The enemies all know, like, two of them fly. A couple of them just shoot. And a few of them have projectiles. And it's all just medieval-themed Doom. Like, almost to the point where it's just almost a total conversion. It doesn't even feel any different.
When you look at the weapons, they are so exactly the same.
Exactly.
You could almost,
it's just a risk in. It could have been like a... a total conversion or something, like an official add-on or something. It's so weird how close it is to Doom, how
it really
little
is.
It has changed. And that's one of my problems with it. My other problem with it is something got lost for me. Like, you know, Doom had this thing where it's like, I think Chris Franklin brought this up, he called this kinesthetically pleasing. But it is. A demon runs up to you, you blast a super shotgun in its face, and it flies off with the sound and the momentum that it has going. Something about this just feels satisfying. To this day, you just run in, right? And you just blast a super shotgun into anything, and it's immediately satisfying something really primal in you. Right.
Yeah, I think even the first shotgun from the first game
absolutely.
Has that
just
feeling.
Something
it's a
about
great
it. To me, none of the weapons in the Heretic feel that much, or feel that, that think... way, or none of the monsters are interesting enough for me to be that sort of frightened or something. Just basically, it's just like Doom, only not as good. That's what it is for me.
Okay, I think one thing, well, I remember when I first started playing Heretic, I remember this really clearly, and I started playing and I was like, oh cool, it's just like Doom, but what really stuck out for me is how colourful everything was. I was like, man, this is, it's like bright blue and it's bright green, yeah, and it's all, it's... these bright, I'm like, man, this isn't what first person shooters are about. I mean, I like Heretic, don't get me wrong, I really like Heretic.
And some people really, really love it too. Some people like, yeah, love Heretic and adore it, and I can't, following up Doom for me, I was just like, Doom just wins, and like, the way I would imagine the medieval Doom would probably be a little bit different, a lot darker, and probably a lot, I mean, it's medieval, so like, why don't make it, like, I also, you know, Heretic is not really that gory or anything, and I would think they would go into like a slightly different maybe direction. I don't understand, I don't know, maybe it's just me.
A lot of the problems with the weapons, I find, why they don't feel so good, is there's like, you know, you look at the weapons, instead of the pistol, now you have like this wand that shoots little sparks, yeah. And it's replaced the shotgun with this crossbow. And I think the biggest problem with the crossbow is that the shotgun is an instant hit weapon. You pull the trigger, you see where it hits straight away. Whereas with the crossbow, it launches projectiles, you know. With, you get this, my least favorite weapon, the chain gun, is replaced with my least favorite weapon, the claw, which looks absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like, I hate that weapon. Like, what's that? What is that?
Who thought of that? Why have I got a claw on my hand? If I had a claw on my hand, shouldn't I be tearing people's faces off instead of like shooting little sparks at them?
Yeah.
And then you get the Phoenix rod, which is like a weird wand that shoots really slow rockets. And then you get a mace. When I got the mace first, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be able to smash people in the face finally. No. You do not do that at all. You shoot weird balls from it, from a mace. What the hell?
Yeah.
The only cool weapon really is the necromancer's gloves you pick up that shoot weird green energy. They look pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess.
But I agree that Heretic is not as good as Doom.
I mean, solid shooter, I guess. Something about the map still rubs me the wrong way. I don't understand. Like, I can't really put this in words. It's just all, I think at the time I was just so disappointed by it not stacking up to Doom exactly. I know a lot of people don't feel that way, but I do. And to me, that's why Heretic always sort of lost out. I don't even, it had the map pack. I'm looking here at
Shadow of the Serpent Riders was sort of.
Was it good?
It was a free add-on. Yeah.
Oh, was it free? I've never played
that. They did the two sort of new chapters for free, and then if you bought Heretic, you basically bought Heretic Shadow of the Serpent Riders. So that's what you bought instead of just Heretic. You bought that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So anything else you want to add? Because for me, Medieval Doom and not as good. That's all. It's still solid, but that's it.
I think there's a couple of things that are added that we could talk about. It added the ability to fly.
Mm-hmm.
It added the ability to look up and down, which was interesting, you know?
Well, I mean, and it also had one thing that Doom Engine always had built in but never used. It had the transparent enemies.
Yes.
Which in Doom, we forgot to mention, they're like Predator kind of thing. It's like fuzzy.
Yes, they are.
The fuzzy invisible demons. But in Heretic, they used that function. It was always there. If you look at Doom source code, it was always there to make things sort of half ghostly. Sort of things, and up and down, it was going on around that time, so things were happening where they're just, you know, that fake looking up and down, and
it looks really weird. It stretches everything.
Well, all it does is just renders things vertical again. So why it looks weird is because all the lines, because it's a Sector 2.5D engine, basically, it's all the lines are vertical. So that's not how it looks. That's not how it works when you look up or down. So, but
yeah,
that's the reason why it's this weird effect. Because like all the lines are still rendered vertically, yet you just get a little bit of the viewport up and down. So it looks really, really weird.
Yeah, but yeah, Heretic also adds an inventory. So you know, instead of just picking up a thing and you use it straight away, you can choose when to use it, which is an interesting thing. You get the morph ovum, which is fun because you can turn your enemies into chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it adds a little bit, but as you say, it's mostly Doom with different graphics and not as good. I like Heretic, I'll say that, but Doom's better by far.
Yeah. Well, it all paved the way for me. Heretic paved the way to a better game.
It really did.
That followed the next year, and
let's move on to
Hexen Beyond Heretic. Yes. Which is a really, really cool game, and what really Heretic should have been.
It really is. It's sort of, I think they sort of found their feet, and they're like, hang on a minute, we're making a medieval game. We should make this dark, we should make this gritty, and we should make this kind of, yeah, more like an adventure.
Yeah, like what... Hexen, well, if you just look at maybe like 30 seconds of gameplay from it, might just look like a medieval Doom or something like Heretic. In reality, is very, 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 very different from Doom. And that's what I like about it.
I agree.
Right in the beginning, you're presented with a choice of several characters with different stats, which are radically different from each other.
Yeah, I think they were trying to turn it into a role-playing game, but they were focusing more on that sort of experience.
It was like more of like, let's mix that with like a hack and slash thingy.
Yeah,
and I think that's, they pulled that off rather successfully, actually. It has that feel of, you know, like in Eye of the Beholder, you go around. It's actually more like Eye of the Beholder, because I'm going to bring that up, that most people have a problem, and so do I, with it being too complicated at times.
It's very complicated.
Mazy, I know you do. But like in Eye of the Beholder, you had the same thing. You just run down the corridor, pressing 50 buttons until a door opens. Hexen is kind of like the same. You go around maps looking for switch that opens something at a completely different map, and not like you would know it would. But so with three characters, each one of them has only a couple of weapons.
I think you get four weapons per character. You've got a warrior, a priest, and a wizard.
Yes,
basically. So you got a sort of real combat guy, and then a guy that you sort of keep your range and shoot from a distance, and then a guy in between.
And all of them have, of course, like in proper RPG, slightly different stats. So, you know, like the mage will, of course, dive first, because he has the lowest in health, but also one of the fastest. And, you know, the warrior is slower, but he can punch everybody to death, basically.
Which is excellent.
And then, of course, the magic for the other characters, which that inventory idea from Heretic now is really put to good use.
It really is.
Because you have a pretty, just four weapons. Is it even four? Or is it three?
I think it's four.
Okay,
sure,
maybe
it's
four. It's been a while. But all like people,
yeah,
because like,
you find three over the course of your adventure.
Right, so it's like, okay. I was thinking that. So, four weapons, not so much, especially comparing to Doom's.
Nine.
So, I guess. I was thinking about. So, yeah, four weapons doesn't seem that much, but now you have magic and inventory items coming in, which can be used very effectively in the completely different and, unpredictable effects.
On
the enemies. It's great.
I think they replaced the Morph Oven with the Porculator, which turns your enemies into pigs. I just love the name Porculator. That's a great name.
Yes. Also, this time, things got slightly less bright colory and really sort of ambient, like the monster designs, like the first, like the two-headed monster with the, levels got really cool with like fences and trees that are like blown leaves and like weird things, lots of traps all over the place.
Lots of traps. You are going to get caught.
Absolutely. Save all the time. And levels also became big. You go through those tiny passages and you come out on the other side and there's like a whole fortress somewhere that you go inside, and you know, like you go into dark caves with like stalactites, and it's the environments were really, really varied and very kind of interactive.
They were. There's a lot of stuff. They're very dynamic levels. A lot of stuff going. You know, there'll be bits where you have to figure out that you have to break your way through a stand of trees, or you know, smash your way through a window.
Yep,
they use this sort of stuff a lot. I think another thing that bears bringing up is that Hexen moved from the linear sort of progressing from level to level through a chapter to a hub, world hub design.
Level, which also Doom originally was supposed to be a hub level game and just wasn't. So that was also, that was not an improvement on the engine. However, the improvement, there's a couple improvements on the engine technically in Hexen.
Yes.
One of them is a scripting system for the maps, which is how you set off different states and different maps, and it actually, you know, opens doors and moves sections around, the whole sections of the map around in those scripts, which, you know, before in the Doom map editor, it was just basic height and, you know, attach it to a switch and work with your standard values for whatever, the light blinking and whatnot. Here, you, the level designer could have a little bit more. But the biggest addition, which I always thought was the biggest addition, only recently looked up how it was done, and was moving sectors, right? And it's the first time in the Doom engine we can have moving sectors, which allowed for, you know, things not just moving up and down like an elevator, but actually doors opening side like. And I thought that was really, really cool until...
They cheated that, didn't they?
Yes, I just looked that up like a couple of months ago, and basically all those elements, the engine is so not made to render those things. They were actually placed outside the map. They're technically not even there. And what you did is you put invisible objects for collisions in your maps, and then would attach like the same... They had to be also perfectly equal to the things that you were about to move, and you attach special values to those sectors and would just render them on top of your stuff, so you couldn't have collision. Basically, it was just fake, which is why I guess it was so rarely used in Hexen. I mean, very effectively, but it's just like doors and stuff like this. And I was like, yeah, but now that I looked it up, and I was like, what a pain in the ass! It was definitely not made to be rendered in that engine, and I can see how they just wanted some pretty effect, basically, and that's how they got around it. I mean, it works because you never really seen that in Doom games, even in Heretic, where it's like everything's supposed to be medieval and stuff. Everything just sort of scrolls up and down, and you're like, well, that's weird, but
okay. Yeah, Heretic never really has interesting set pieces or level design.
No,
or
but Hexen
like
sure as hell does. Just the first level alone is.
Hexen has the most sort of cinematic for that time. The most cinematic levels, like the most. There's just these set pieces. You know, you go into this huge cathedral with like stained glass
windows.
They
feel like environments, like real environments. And not just like, you know, you always go from like outdoors to indoors. There's always a sense of space. And like you go into a cave and like it starts like earth shakes and just everything collapses.
Yeah, the ice things are like collapsing all around you. And Hexen added jumping. So, you know, there was bits where you like, you really.
You have to just,
oh man,
you have to hop a little.
Yeah, we forgot to mention in Heretic that they added wind that could blow you around a little bit.
That's right. It's a pain in the ass.
But yeah, so Hexen, there's some really, really memorable set pieces in Hexen for me. And when I pick up the game and I start playing it, I love running through these amazing environments. I just remember being like playing Hexen for the first time. Do you remember playing Hexen for the first time?
Yes, I do.
I obviously, being a kid, I picked a warrior, and I just remember.
So, I still pick the warrior, even though I really shouldn't.
Of course.
I don't know. I think it's better with like the in between class, which you get the magic and the speed, basically.
Yeah, I think the priest is the guy that gets the best final.
Well, it's
weapon
always
well.
Like that. Yeah, you know, like in RPG games, the sort of in between character, you sort of get the best of both worlds, sort of thing.
Which is, I love the design of that sword that he gets too. That's amazing. So, yeah, but is it the priest that gets the sword? I think so.
Yes.
I love being a kid and like just, you know, from Heretic where, will I have a wand? I'm shooting little zappy spells out of a wand. Suddenly I'm a fighter and I'm punching these guys in the face and like running away from in this big gloomy cathedral in the very first level. And then you run up this big tall tower and you like punch the bell. It was just sensational. And you know, there's leaves falling down. Considering this is id Tech 1, I was just like blown away. Doom was a great game for the time, but it had none of this stuff in it, you know.
No, Hexen really, really tried to do something different and did. Yeah. And my only problem with playing Hexen now is because it tries so much to be different, it the difficulty curve is really up there. It's not it doesn't take long before you're lost somewhere and you don't know what to do because you probably missed something.
Still get stuck in Hexen.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I do now. I mean, back in the day, it was very interesting and everything. Now, it's just more annoying when you miss stuff. Because, you know, there's some stuff in there which is pretty easy to miss. Oh, shit, I missed a hidden switch. And here we go. Now, I have to backtrack through this whole gigantic level again, which I now cleared and stuff like that. So
I think I once lost 2 hours from a single switch.
Yeah, that's what happens.
But I'm a dungeon crawling kind of guy. I love that sort of stuff. So yeah. But yeah, so I think if you can tolerate that sort of thing, Hexen is definitely worth a look. Play with the automap. Use the automap a lot.
Yes. And save. You will save very often because you will
save
die.
Save very often. Yeah, you'll die. Man, Hexen loves killing you in traps and enemies coming out from nowhere. And has just really a really cool aesthetic, you know. The music is better than Heretic. The designs are better than Heretic. It's mm-hmm. It's funny to think that this is the same people that made Heretic, yeah. Which was a fairly uninspired Doom clone. And all of a sudden they went, hey, let's take this to the next level. They sort of did with Hexen, with the Doom engine, what Shadowcaster did with the Wolf 3D engine. They made it almost completely unrecognizable.
By all means, recommend it. Be aware that it's tough.
It's not an easy game, but it's very rewarding to play through, if you know.
There's also an expansion before we segue. Yeah. There's this expansion which is also pretty good and also tough. I think I have it somewhere. It's basically a map
just
pack.
People to fight.
But yeah, there's that. It's still decent enough for you to play through if you're into Hexen. Sure. But so we thought Hexen squeezed everything out of the Doom engine by having all those new things in it and being different and stuff, until in 1996, when nobody gave a shit about Doom anymore, because Quake and Duke Nukem 3D came out and all those other, you know, Bethesda had the Future Shock and Skynet, which were full 3D. People were going for full 3D. So 1996,
yeah.
Very under the radar. Rogue Entertainment.
It was Rogue. It was originally Cygnus, the guys that made Raptor.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, well, it was the designer moved from Cygnus to Rogue.
Really? I did not know that. Well,
there you go.
There's this tiny little game called Strife is released. Nobody buys it, and it dies.
It was released in that blank space between Duke Nukem 3D and Quake, which are like the two biggest shooters of like
and
the
not just
last
that,
four
but that
years,
is right
know?
In the midst of a technology chase. So
yeah.
A game from with an engine from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
People didn't give it, you know, a minute of their time.
And
But if they had...
Oh, man.
Strife is something fucking special.
I think it's probably blasphemy to say this, but I think Strife is probably my favorite Doom Engine game just because of how big in ambition it was.
Yeah, Strife was an incredibly ambitious game. And it's really, really weird... I don't know, I don't know if it was in development loan, like why they settled on Doom Engine exactly.
I have no idea.
Cause in
no
a way
idea.
It even kind of hurts it slightly. I mean, it really doesn't, but at the same time, you're like,
I think
it's perfect the way it is. Yeah, we did, but like, has it been made on the more engine that was more suitable for things that it was trying to do would probably be even a better game.
Yeah.
Which Strife is a very solid game. That's the thing. Before anything else, Strife is well worth playing, and it plays really well to this day.
And it plays just like Doom.
It plays just like Doom in shooting things, and
yep.
It adds so much. Well, so you're in this world where something happened. There's this comic book opening cutscene. Something, and you're basically a guy who's fighting against the Order.
Yeah.
And right in the beginning of the game, you quickly find out that you can talk to characters.
Yes.
You come up to them and, you know, you see their portraits and you have actual conversational choices.
Dialogue options, just like in an adventure game or an RPG.
And if you have the CD version of Strife, they even say something with a...
They have voices. They have voice acting.
Voicing for everything. For all the things. So, and... Slightly moving past the first area, not only you realize you can talk to characters, you also realize that not everybody is hostile.
Yes.
In
fact, they actually warn you about this.
Yeah, and if you try to shoot somebody, you instantly get... You basically get shot by a bunch of guards. So you were cautious.
It has an alarm system.
Yeah, you were very cautious, and you realize that you're in this little sort of village kind of situation where there's a tavern, there's a couple of shops, there's a few locked doors, there's a big important building that you can't go into, and very quickly there's a guy there who asks you to steal something for him. And that's when you realize that the game is very, very different. Especially if you try to go in and actually steal the thing that he asked you for. Because he basically sets you up. And that's when you realize that maybe this is not the way to play this game.
It's funny because one of the taglines for the game was trust no one. There was one that was, I think, Quest for the Sigil.
That's
and the other one was trust no one. And they really reinforce that straight away.
Yes, they do. So, and right there you realize how different it is with this. And before long you sort of discover the resistance.
Yes.
That puts a computer, a navigator with a nice female voice.
The story goes in Strife that the Order have taken all the women away, and so the last remaining women got sort of buried deep in underground in like these secret locations. So one of the last women on Earth is Blackbird, who's the sort of, she's your mission control. She mm-hmm. tells you what to do, and she's your little company.
Yes.
On your way through the game.
And then, it all works into the story very well.
I really like this feature, You don't realize how lonely an experience a first-person shooter was until you played Strife.
She talks a lot, too. She's got a lot to say about very many different situations. It's really, really cool. People have got a lot to say, too. Like, everyone's got a lot to say in Strife. In a game that's made on Doom Engine, people all of a sudden talk, and they talk at length. You have all these different decisions to make. You can join them. I mean, it's still kind of linear, but you have this good.
There's three different endings. So
which ones do you really want? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and then before long, right, almost in the beginning of the game, that important building where you possibly stole a chalice from, you storm it with friendly units, and there's big robots that shoot fire and shit like that, and it happens relatively early in the game. And
it's all about a third of the way through, I think.
All of it is really, really cool. It looks weird because it's all in the Doom engine, but that thing squeezed out. I mean, your companions, you have companion robots, you have talking, you have, do you have looking up and down stuff? Yes, you do, because you have to disable those alarms, right? You have jumping, of course. And of course, stealth kills, which is stealth kills are kind of weird.
It feels kind of tacked on, but you've got a crossbow that you get right near the start, and you get two different ammo types for it. You can actually choose the different ammo for a couple of different guns.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose between electro bolts and poison bolts. And if you don't alarm anybody, you can quite happily walk around an enemy base, and stay out of sight and shoot poison bolts at people and silently take out almost a whole base of bad guys.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but it works.
And it felt great at the time because you had options of how you want to play, This was really pushing boundaries that hadn't much been pushed at that point.
It's very sad that this game, still to this day, nobody knows it exists, and it's very overlooked. And it really tried to give you a completely different experience. Like, Hexen moved into this whole RPG territory. Strife just moved into the believable open world territory. When you first go to like Rebel base, you can see it's a real base. They have like bunk beds, well, not bunk beds, just beds and different sort of things, and they have the map room and stuff like this. And then when they eventually clear out, you can still go visit that place that's been, like, abandoned. There, yeah. And it's abandoned and there's nothing there.
That blew
me
away. There's rats that follow you around. It's insane how much how unnecessary detail they put in there. They could have just taken all the character sprites out and left it like that.
Yeah, no, it's all very, very cool. They try to, they actually do pull off, as ridiculous as it sounds, in the engine that's so primitive, but it was by 1996 standards for sure. They really pull off a complete world in that game. Somehow, they just managed to stretch that engine just enough without slopes, without any of those things that we think need to make realistic environments. And, you know, Doom never depicted urban environments, really, because it really wasn't made for that. So, you know, and Hexen had those... I mean, Hexen had the cathedrals and everything, but it was still, like, sort of, fantasy setting. All of a sudden... Strife comes with those, like, really sort of, sci-fi post-apocalyptic kind of world. I mean, it doesn't really look like a post-apocalyptic world either. It looks...
Not at all.
It looks different, but it looks like, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe that.
I always think of it as, like, religious post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, kind of like that. And I also like all the character sprites and stuff, the human sprites and stuff. They look really neat.
They're very low res. I think they're lower res than Doom sprites, to be honest.
They're exactly the same. It just Yeah, it just
because it was years later, probably.
Yeah, it stands out more. Plus, you know, now they're not those weird demons that you can sort of, your imagination can fill in the blanks. Now they're, you know, humans in robes, and you're like,
yeah,
I can see that person has no eyes, you know, or no mouth.
This blob of pixels for a face, but yeah,
but you can tell, like, a shopkeep was a guy with a beard, and, you know, he waved his arms around and stuff like this, so it was cool. And they all had portraits and stuff to say, so
they've got this really neat comic book sort of art for the portraits
and the cutscenes.
And for the cutscenes, and there's some pretty extended cutscenes, you know. The first time you get the sigil, when you get the very first part of the sigil is kind of this, like, ultra weapon of the game that isn't very good. But you have to use it to fight bosses, or you can't kill them. But other than that, you don't really have to use it. And when you first get the first part of it, the story really starts to expand upon itself, you know, and you start playing the game proper, like the story proper. They really tried to write a plot, you know. It's was one of the very early first person shooters where the focus was on plot. They have a genuine story, you know. There's betrayal. There's all this sort of stuff. It's great.
And of course, you know, you've mentioned the three different endings. Although the game is pretty much the same.
I think you do boss fights in two different orders, and that's pretty much it.
But it's still like it's cool what that game did, and it's especially cool that this game achieved all that with the technology that it had, and that's why it's such a real shame that to this day. Nobody knows it exists.
Nobody. Well, you mentioned Strife, and you always go, "Oh yeah, I played the demo of that," but nobody has it, you know.
Yeah, no, it's nobody ever bought it because it just happened to come out at the wrong time when people were concerned with technology, like they aren't now. It was that very specific moment in time where people were like, internet, 3D, Windows, you know, hardware acceleration, and you know what? Strife had none of those things, and. Who gave a shit about a believable world in a first-person shooter? People didn't even think that was sort of possible until a couple of years later, Half-Life comes out, and people are like, oh, look, there's actually a believable joined experience instead of maps. But yet Strife did not what Half-Life did, but, you know, Strife did the...
But something different.
An idea. Strife had its own idea of a world within the first-person shooter, and it accomplished it. Like, that's what it was, you know.
I think something that's kind of weird with Strife is, you know, people overlooked it because it wasn't ambitious in terms of graphics, but it was probably, if not more ambitious, then at least as ambitious as games like Quake and 3D.
I'd say more. Because it, you know, still Duke Nukem 3D and Quake. Well, Quake was ambitious in technology. Duke Nukem 3D,
Quake plays just like Doom.
I love Pretty Quake. I really like Quake. As ugly as it is, I love it and I adore it. Strife is more ambitious in design than either Duke Nukem 3D. Definitely. or Quake for that matter. It works. It works perfectly. I would recommend, you know, play the demo, of course, and I think ZDoom also supports Strife. It has been for a few years.
Okay, cool. I think the only, if I was to pick any points with Strife that would probably, you know, be lesser points is, like Hexen, with the hub-based world, yes, it can get kind of mazy and you can get kind of lost, which a lot of people, you know, that's not their thing. And if that's not your thing...
It's not my thing.
It's probably... Strife is probably going to annoy you on that front. It's not as bad as Hexen, but there's definitely points where you're running
which
around.
Which is what I'm saying. Strife to me is very... It's Hexen, I get frustrated. Strife, not so much. Because Strife has a lot more other things going on. So I would recommend Strife. Just get Strife if you can buy it. You know, in any shape or form that you can, and then, you know, sell it, you know, like, sorry, recommend it to all your friends. If you're a retro PC gamer, that's one of those hidden gems, literally, it's weird, cause, you know, you go looking for games made, there's not that many games made using the Doom engine. You know, it's not build or like whatever, but
yeah.
Strife is one of them. Yet still, people seem to just not know about it. They've seen the name. A lot of people are like, oh, I've seen Strife. I've seen the logo, but nobody actually played the full game like ever. Very underrated. So yeah,
you and I did.
Yeah, thank God. We're pushing it on people actively over the last couple of years. But
it's true.
Yeah.
It's got a great story to play through. It's got a great ending. You know, I felt great when I finished Strife. You know, the story really resolves itself quite nicely. For a first person shooter in 1996, you know, it's a great game. Do you like the last bit, the very last bit where you're running around the factory? Because I don't like that bit.
I don't mind that, because that is the rare last bit, so...
That felt kind of like they were trying to drag the game out longer.
Yeah, really, yeah. And you know what? It's fine. To me, Strife is like, that's the thing with me. Like, you know, I always do that classic game bashing where I just nitpick a few things about a great game and I just hate on it. But it works the other way around for me, where... Even if the game is not perfect, and Strife is not one of those games, but I will defend quite a few games that are not very good just because they have unique features that I happen like a lot. So for me, in case with Strife, a few shortcomings that it has, and I will be honest with you, Strife has very few shortcomings because we now moved on to that point, from that point when graphics mattered. So graphics does not matter anymore. And you take that away, Strife's got a lot going for it. So, yeah, nothing about Strife really annoys me that much that I will be like, maybe not. Like, Strife, I will recommend always, always, and to everyone. It's really cool.
I think the best thing about Strife is you've got this 1996 game, and yet all of the current industry buzzwords, they get shoehorned into all of the press releases and are never really that accurate. You know, you've got, like, open world.
Yes.
Sort of non-linear story, you know, choose your own way of playing. All this sort of stuff is relevant to a 1996 shooter that just... It still blows me away how much ambition they have.
Yes.
They had.
Yes. And they pulled it off. That's the biggest thing. You know, like you know, we were discussing Tech War on the other podcast, and, you know, it was an interesting design, but look what happened.
They had a really ambitious design, but they just...
And they had the better technology, and they turned out, it turned out into an unplayable game. Now, Strife, on the other hand, had an inferior graphical technology, but it's a really solid game. So
it's supreme. It plays just like Doom, to the point where my brother had never seen Strife or never heard of Strife or anything like that, and one day came across me playing Strife and goes, "Oh, hey, that's the Doom engine." After 2 seconds of watching me run, despite how fast I ran.
absolutely.
The saddest thing about Strife, I would say, is that it's the only Doom engine game that they never even attempted a sequel for. Even Hacks had a sequel worked on, and Chex Quest got sequels, so it's the only one that never got a sequel in any way, shape, or form or consideration. What a shame.
That's a good... Can we use that as a segue?
We absolutely are going to use
and
it as a segue.
Speaking of Chex Quest, we don't even have to move anywhere, because 1996... had another rather unique situation happen. That was back in the day when you can still find toys in your cereal.
Yeah.
Before it was, you know, mail 55 things or a download code or whatever, when it was still legal in, well, at least in the United States too. I don't know if,
yeah, we still had toys and we don't.
It's illegal for us to put stuff into edible stuff because somebody's gonna, you know, eat a CD while they're eating cereal.
People are pretty dumb. I can understand.
Yeah. So 1996, when it was still legal in America to put stuff inside boxes of cereal, many people, could buy Chex cereal, which was highly advertised around that time because of that. It came with a total conversion, standalone total conversion of Doom.
Based
on Chex cereal. And as it is just as ridiculous as it sounds. However, it was actually a rather well-made product.
I have to say this. I've played Chex Quest, and I've never eaten Chex cereal, so I do not endorse Chex cereal in any way, shape, or form.
I don't like cereal, period, so...
Okay, well, compared to every other prize I've got in a packet of cereal,
yeah.
Chex Quest kicks ass.
Yeah, oh, of course.
And like, oh, man, Chex Quest is... It's amazing because it's... The first one especially is really simple and really easy, but man, it's a game made for kids.
Yes.
And it plays, I think the
it's
biggest,
Doom.
The best thing.
It's Doom. Somebody was just let's take Doom and make game for kids out of it. Yeah. And it worked.
Yeah. And it's kind of silly. I mean, they replaced enemies dying with getting warped to another dimension.
I don't care. You have a power spoon.
Yeah, man. And a power spork.
And everything is gooey, and you eat fruit, and especially Chex Quest 1 is all those just gigantic boxy levels, which is like open rooms and square things, like boxes and boxes, and sound effects are great, the music is like cheery, and you just go around just using your spoons to just get rid of all those enemies, and the art is really cool. I like it.
Yeah,
like
it's all
blue and green, and the monsters look sort of cute.
Globby green slimy,
and like the flying ones that
they're pain in the ass, like old flying enemies. But yeah, it's amazing that they were like, man, what can we give kids? Let's give them Doom that their parents will let them play.
Yeah, and it was like the sound effects are great. That's all you ever hear from that Doom. Like, you play it every 5 seconds.
That's a very, very good impersonation of the.
Because I just played it yesterday.
There you go. But yeah, so no, I think when you look at, like I said, of all the prizes that I've ever seen from cereal boxes, Chex Quest.
Hell yeah. To this day, I don't think you can top that. First person shooter for kids that didn't. Have you, anybody else, if you've ever played any 3D first person shooter for kids, you know that they suck.
They suck so badly.
Chex Quest does not suck. Why? Because it's Doom.
Yeah, man, and it plays just like Doom. Like, it's like Heretic. It's that close a copy that it's just
pretty much. Everything is replaced, you know, text is family friendly, and there's only a few levels.
There's five, I think.
Five in the first, and then, of course, the second one you could download for free.
Yes.
And second one has more challenging levels that are less boxy.
Does it still have five levels?
I don't know.
I think it still have five, but they're much different. They're like they've actually learned how to design a level.
Yeah, like at first you can tell they were just like maybe a couple of artists or whatever, because the art is really good. For the second one, you know, things got a bit more creative and stuff like that. And of course, it was a free download with your box of cereal. So there's that. Chex Quest. I mean, and let's get to even the best part then, because a couple years ago, the third part was released, and now they all joined together in a freeware release.
In an actual, a three-part Chex Quest game.
Using the best source port that there is, Z-Doom. So, Google Chex Quest, download it, and play it. It's free, and it's fun, and you can see what some people did. What some people did with the Doom engine when they were like, we really need to make this game for marketing quick, but we want to make it good, I guess. Was that the idea? Because it looks
the
like
smartest
really,
idea ever. Doom is awesome.
They really tried, though. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, they
like,
really did. It
they
wasn't
didn't just
like
shit it out, and they were like, whatever. And yeah, you can see it really, really worked, and you can also see what kind of quality product you could get into with your cereal at one point.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing about Chex Quest, other than the fact that you get to fight people with a power spoon and a power spork, is the fact that the final boss of Chex Quest is a wall. So that's pretty fun for me. I love the fact that, yeah, they're like, yeah, you got to fight the final boss, it's a wall. But yeah, so yeah, check out Chex Quest. If you've never played Chex Quest, and I know some people definitely haven't, because
Of course they haven't. They're like, Chex Quest, what?
Man, yeah. Why would I play Chex Quest? It really is. You know, it's a fun game. It's a cute game. I recommend it to someone. You'll spend no time playing it.
Like, the first one is so easy, you'll be done in like an hour or two, maybe.
Yeah.
Even in the highest difficulty. Second one, a bit less. And then the third one is an actual kind of, feels like an actual Doom mod, you know. Like, third one has more creative levels, but that's recent. And again, they're all together, they all stand alone. And you don't need anything else. Just download the archive, run the game, and bam, you're good. Excellent. So,
Chex Quest.
Yeah, thumbs up. So, and it's a nice switch from mostly violent, dark games that are made.
Yeah, you're not actually killing people, you're just sending them back.
No, you send them back.
Lovely.
It looks like you're eating them, but...
No, that's fine. You're hitting them with your power spork. It's all good.
Yeah, you eat fruit. Promotes good eating. It's weird, right? That it wasn't.
And drinking water.
Yeah, picked up a glass of water. You picked up a glass of water. And Chex is actually your armor. The actual cereal is your armor, but what you actually eat is fruit and vegetables, which is weird. Nowadays, that would like not happen. It would be like munching on the boxes of cereals for power-ups. But no, they were like, hey, it's fruit. And Chex is just kind of like an additional, a part of a complete good breakfast, sort of say.
Yeah, that's it. The mega health is like part of a complete breakfast.
Yes.
So you get the cereal in there. So there you go.
Yes. So, well, speaking of dark and violent games, made with the Doom engine, it propels us to pretty much the last product to ever
be commercially released with the
Doom engine. And that's a really other really weird, unique one.
Very obscure
it's
now.
It's a very obscure commercial total conversion of Doom called Hax, and that's H-A-C capital X because it's the 90s.
That's it. It's actually it was an add-on for Doom 2 originally. So yeah, there you go.
So that you paid, I guess $15.
I think it was $15 for one version and $20
for
the other.
Floppy.
Yeah,
and it was 1997, so yeah, CD was the way to go. So the HR, it was a budget release, basically, because, you know, games still cost... I mean, $15 seems like a decent chunk of money.
You don't really like Hacks, do you?
I was just about to say, I'll let you go first.
Okay. Shall I go?
Yeah, go. Hacks. Hacks.
Okay, Hacks. I quite like Hacks. I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. Is Hacks was made with Dehacked, which was, you know,
That's really cool. Actually, here we go. I'm going to chime in now.
Okay, you chime in.
Okay, Dehacked was this very unique piece of customization that we never have seen since, and for a good reason, but... because everything in Doom, in WADs, you know, in the WAD files, there were you could have, you know, level sounds, graphics that replace the original iWAD data. But no logic or anything. That was all hard-coded in the Doom engine. Sure. So some smart person, and I'm sure at one point in time I used to know that person's name, actually decided to run through all the different versions of Doom executables with a debugger and find out where all those values for all those hard-coded tables are and make an editor that allowed you to change those values and cross-reference them. And so you could make, for example, a like a Pain Elemental shoot health packs instead of fireballs. And you couldn't really change that much, but like for weapons, you could change their fire rate or when they reload and stuff like that. So you could essentially swap things for other things. Sure. With Dehacked, and when you distributed it, because obviously distributing the executable was illegal, so you just distributed it with the file that would patch your version of Doom to all those new values if your game was heavily modified. And, you know, a lot of people used it to modify the text, like, you know, menus and in between level text and, you know, exit messages, all that were easily editable. in the Doom file. So, and hacks probably, like, because I replayed it 2 days ago, a few levels, used that very extensively.
To create some really
cool things, like my favorite one is destructible furniture.
Yeah,
you could kick those chairs and they fly back and they break. And you know, many people notice, you know, of course, the breakable glass. Although that's kind of a cheat, doesn't really look like breakable glass either. I mean, it does, but it doesn't.
You soon notice it if like you're standing close to it and you shoot it and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah,
but it does the job. You know, they sort of managed to do what they intended to do with it.
Yeah. Okay, you can carry on that we're done with D-Act.
Hacks is basically a total conversion of Doom 2 that was, as we said, commercial add-on. And Hacks basically puts you in a role of a wimpy little hacker who got caught by the government hacking into some FBI sites. And then you spend a year in prison pumping iron so you don't get beaten up. And all of a sudden the government are like, oh, we've had this crazy mutant virus thing taking over the world. We need a crazy tough hacker who just happens to be you to save the world for $20 million. I think that's the story. I think that's the gist of it. So play as this tough guy that's had a frontal lobe implanted in him. It's great. This one thing I love is when you get damaged and you look at the little avatar, he's got like this Terminator thing going where half of his face is steel and half of it is like skull sticking out. So that's kind of fun. And it was made really, really rushed. You know, the original release was notoriously buggy. Mm-hmm. They've patched it since version 1.2. I just tried the other day to see how much they've fixed. They've fixed a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. but I still got a texture crash from it in, I think, like level 6 or 7. But Hacks is... It really stands out for me because it's got a really distinctive art style. It does real world better than, I think, any Doom engine game does. I mean, the real world level in Doom 2 looks ridiculous. Yes. It looks nothing like the real world at all. But when you start getting into some of the, you know, some of the levels in the game, like they did Alcatraz Prison in it, which looks great. It looks fantastic. It could almost be a build engine game in terms of design in spots. Some of the weapons are very similar, but I think the thing that really sets Hacks apart from Doom and Doom 2 is, again, they've got this really puzzly level design. You know, it's got, they really, yeah. I mean, some elements you can see they copied, but some bits they really focused on giving you a puzzle to solve.
Yeah.
So if it can be frustrating, I'll definitely admit this, that Hacks, you know, there are frustrating spots where you'll spend ages looking for a tiny little button on a desk or the tiny little crevice with a little light that you have to shoot through. But the levels are really big and complex. Like, they are big. There's some big levels in there, you know.
They're
really, really, really big levels. They have really complex levels, really complex designs.
Even if you know what you're doing, most levels will take you 20 minutes or further to finish, I'd say.
Yeah.
Even in the beginning. Like, level 2. How long is level 2? 30
seconds, I think. And I can do it in, like,
yeah, well, the first level is the first level, but, you know, like, they're really big.
Yeah, they're very complex,
and half the time you balance it on edges and stuff like that, you're going to praise it some more before I go in?
Yeah, I thought I'd better build it up a little bit before you tear it down completely.
I'm not going to tear it down, it's just not my thing. Hacks, well, first of all, I think the music is really annoying. A lot of people love that music, but Jesus, music is really annoying.
It's kind of hokey.
Yeah, and shut it off. I like the stop motion enemies. Some of them look really good, others not so much. I think that the more mutant humanoid ones look a lot better than the robot ones.
Robots look
It's like stick figures, white stick figures that walk around. Bad animated stick figures with 2 frames of it. I think the customization is really cool. I think real world environments are really cool when they actually match. Cause if like, especially just playing a couple of years ago, I'm going to nitpick. You go in and you're about a height of a table. You're like, am I a child? Am I a 5 year old with a gun? Cause everything is like, the door is like 3 times my size and my face is literally facing a table edge. So the scale is not quite there all the time. And then the puzzles, some of the puzzles I find really annoying. And a lot of the times you're in a situation when you just run in with, well, I was playing on a higher difficulty. I don't know if I shouldn't have, but you run into some place and you're sort of ambushed by a whole bunch of enemies.
There's a lot of ambushes.
And you don't really have a lot of, like, first level is packed with pickups, right? And then you're like, oh, where did all my ammo go? And now I'm just kicking things.
There's a really weird design choice they made where they don't give you that many weapons, and then all of a sudden you get like three weapons in a single level.
Yeah, and it's all like rooms full of pickups. Like, you just go in and it's like 50 ammo packs, and you're like, what's going on? And then you just use that for the rest of the level because there's not going to be a single one further down the line. It's weird. And puzzles, they're cool because it's a Doom engine. You wouldn't think so many puzzles would be possible. You press the button, something lowers, and you run around the edge to the whole fucking other side of the room trying not to fall, and then you jump into the hole and you're teleported somewhere else, and there you go, and now you have to pull another five switches to, like, that's the puzzles in Hacks. They explored that aspect of level design to its fullest. Levels
they really did
really, really puzzly. You will spend a lot of times and you will fuck up a lot and have to redo a whole bunch of things if you don't figure it out right, which happens often with me. I'm not that clever. I just like shooting things. So, yes, okay. Hacks did quite a few very interesting things. It just happens to be none of them, I think, are polished enough for me to accept them.
Or I think this none of them is a are real
really
problem.
Just my thing. Like, and later on the game just falls apart. I haven't played the new version to see how much it was fixed exactly. I mean, even enemies feel tweaked in the new version, right? Because I actually played the original version first, and then I was like, oh, let me try the update. And actually, things feel very different. And
they've fixed a lot.
Yeah, and I was just like, ah, it's cool. Like, they fixed a lot of stuff, but yet something tells me that later levels are just as insane as originally, because the game pretty much stops being playable about two-thirds of the way in, at least for me.
Didn't make it to the first hacking level, did you?
Well, no, I sure did. Wait, with the...
When you played the other day.
Not the other day, no, I did not.
Okay. When you get to the hacking levels, it's some of the most obtuse and bizarre level design in terms of graphics and gameplay I've ever seen in a game. So you hack by running around a first-person shooter level that makes no sense. It's some of the weirdest stuff I've ever seen.
Yes.
That's a really low point. The biggest problem with Hacks is that it got rushed to try and beat Quake 1 to release.
Right.
And nothing got polished, nothing got balanced. There's a lot of problems with the game, so...
Which it didn't, by the way. It still came out after Quake, so...
Yeah. They kind of just... They were just like, man,
It escaped, basically. And it was all balanced on it being, you know, it was a commercial. It was such a weird thing that such a thing would even exist, but.
Yeah, it is a commercial add-on to Doom 2.
Commercial add-on to Doom 2. So you paid money.
For a mod.
I mean, around that time it was going on, there was quite a few commercial Quake games that were about to come out. Stuff like that. So yeah, I guess it was happening around that time, but for Doom, nobody really it was a strange concept. You know, people were selling the CDs full of levels from the internet and BBSs, but nobody really did the commercial total conversion at that point.
I think they had to pay id $5,000 for the rights to market.
That's not that much. Sorry.
No, it's really cheap. That's what gets me. That's really, really cheap.
Hey, I could have afforded it.
Yeah, that's crazy. But I think Hacks was really a landmark sort of project in terms of it showed exactly how much could be done with
dehacked. Dehacked work is amazing. Like, playing it the other day, I'm just like looking at it now and I'm just like, wow, there's a lot of dehacked things going on. And they try. I mean, yes, again, real world environments, as disproportionate and unrealistic as they might be, you know, that's something that has not been done in a Doom engine. And I think, you know, they sort of went and did the stop motion enemies without them looking like things from Witch Haven, aka horrible.
Yeah.
So, terrible. Yeah, so I think things in hacks actually look nice. You know, the mutant things, not the robots, but everything else looks good.
I plan on, and even like the weapon designs, like the graphical user interface design, I plan on featuring it on Das Ist Good at one point.
Nice.
I find it that pretty. So, Hacks is pretty obscure. You can pick it up for free from the developer's website still. And an interesting thing about Hacks is that even though it never really did that well and it's not really regarded as that good of a game, a lot of guys from that worked on Hacks went on to work with a lot of companies like Zatrix, with id, with Epic, with Rogue, with Raven, you know, big names in the first person shooter sort of world at the time. That was kind of a stepping stone project for a lot of guys. So that's pretty cool. You know, it's a little slice of history.
No, and interesting. I'd recommend it, especially because, well, you can't lose again. Get Z-Doom, get the new version, and because all the, you know, you don't have to patch anything now. Z-Hacked is just basically built into the WAD. And so Z-Doom loads that, or any modern source port loads that, and just...
You can play it on Chocolate Doom. I tried it on my phone the other day just to see if it would run. It runs on your telephone. It does. You can run it on pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
It's a badly flawed game, but you should still try it just for
it's free. Again, the whole game is free, now it's not an add-on anymore. It's an IWAD now.
So you can just use that
with the source port. Download the source port for your favorite platform. Download the WAD. Load it up. It works right out of the box. So
good.
Can't get any better than that. And if things are free, it always adds to their value for me.
It really does.
So no longer paying $20 for a stack of floppies. And that brings us to the end of the end. Commercially released, semi-commercially and commercially released Doom games. That engine lasted from the tail end of 1993 to mid-97.
Yeah, that's decent, I think, considering how much technology advanced in that time.
Yeah, in that time, everybody was going for, you know, superiority over everything. And, you know, also everybody was coming up on Doom. That's when we didn't call it first-person shooter, and we didn't even call it 3D action at that point either. They literally called games Doom clones. Play Doom, play all those games. Is there anything else that we missed while talking about those games?
I think the beauty of Doom, the beauty of games like a perfectly balanced and polished game experience like Doom, is it's there. You make your own memories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Go in, play it. You've obviously played Doom, everyone listening.
Except for that one guy who is now running to get, hopefully now running... Parallel to this, like, if you were that one guy who has not played Doom, I hope you listen to this Doom, and you have it minimized, and right now you're downloading the shareware and you're downloading the Z Doom archive as well, so you can put them together and at least play the shareware. That's just for you.
Yeah, just at least play through that one episode. It's a great episode, you know.
It's awesome. What's wrong with you?
It costs nothing. It's a real slice of history, and it's probably the shareware game that got shared around the most at the time. I'm sure of it.
It's the shareware game that sold the most, got shared around the most, and it got pirated a lot the most. So all of those mosts are in that chunk of tail end of 93-94. That's really what it was.
It's like the Beatles, man. Even if you don't like their music, you have to appreciate what they did.
It is kind of like the Beatles, you know? Young guys got together, they all had something to bring to this amazing union that was like nothing before or since, and they all fell apart. Yeah, it is kind of like the Beatles.
Went on to do all their own things.
That's right. Not as successfully as they have been before, and look at Where most of them now?
Man, history repeats in all sorts of advancements in all media.
That's right. And just the other day, it looked not that long ago, I was playing the game and they had a picture of all of them together and said, "We're not wearing any pants." And look at them now, they're all middle-aged guys. All right, so, you know, all these games that we've mentioned, they're all really, really solid games, even the ones that I don't particularly like. And they all have their shortcomings, except for Doom, too. But they're all worth playing. There's not that many of them, and, you know, the formerly free / not so free ones are, two of them, the two of the last ones discussed are now available for free, so you should really check them out because they're free. Find Strife, that game is in need of some kind of a good old games re-release or something.
I've actually voted for it being added to good old games.
So have
you
I.
Go and do this, guys.
Yeah, if you have a GOG account, please go and vote for Strife. So maybe one day it will happen. The game deserves more recognition than it got, which is none. And then you have Hex and Heretic, of course, all worth it, and then you have Doom. So that's really all you have. All those games are wonderful games. They come from this really interesting time in video game PC video game history, where everybody was chasing the technology, but yet they were discovering how to make 3D first person shooters more exciting with the limited resources that they had.
Well, thank you for having me along on the podcast again. It's been a delight to share some memories from a very different perspective.
Obviously. You know, it's like, I love having you here. I just have to get up very early in the morning, but...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's fine. So
I could always get up early in the morning.
And you know what? It's nice to have a returning guest.
Yeah, I should come back sometime. What are we going to talk about next? We could talk about Quake Engine, except there was only one decent game made in it.
Let's pimp out your blog, your screenshot blog again.
Yeah, dosisgood.tumblr.com. It's very easy to find. You just check out my Twitter page, and I link it to right in the profile. I've got over 50 games there. I play old games. I take screenshots of some of the prettiest bits, and I put them up. If you're an appreciator, if you're a graphics whore like me, I'm a graphics whore, but I'm a graphics whore for really old graphics. So if you like VGA res graphics, like 320x200, if that's your kind of thing, check it out. There's some really beautiful games, some of which you've probably never heard of.
Mm-hmm. No, it's check really it. Cool. I recommend it highly. I do my screenshot things. You can look at all of them on the Facebook page for DOS Nostalgia, although unlike Ben, I only take one screenshot of each game for some reason. DOS is Good is a great blog. You will always... there's some really cool, interesting stuff there. And some Doom related stuff, obviously.
Yeah, I've got
quite a bunch there.
I think I've got four of the Doom Engine games on there.
So the big four, so to speak, that's what they're called. What they're called, basically. So most certainly check it out. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I'm Anatoly, and you probably know where to find me, but I'm on Twitter as Das Nostalgic, and also anything that you can Google, you can put it on Google, Das Nostalgia, just all of that stuff is me. So that's how you can contact me. If you have an interesting topic for a podcast to discuss with me, contact me, and you might be here talking. And you can find Ben on Twitter at...
You can. I'm at Ben_304. Very easy to find.
And, you can play games that Ben took part in creating. You have, a blog, right, with the list?
I have. I'm kind of between blogs at the moment.
Yes.
I'm too busy making games to talk about making games at the moment.
It's true. Just Google Ben Chandler, and a bunch of games will pop up, and you should play them. Yeah.
There's far too many. You don't want to play all of them, but
there's a lot.
And play Doom.
Yeah, but play Doom. Most importantly, play Doom. If you haven't played it, play Doom. If you have played it, play Doom. It's
a perfect summary. If ever they were.
That's it. So, thank you for being with us, and thank you, Ben, for participating.
An absolute pleasure, as was last time.
And hopefully both of us will return to talk about something else, if we can think of it. And listeners, have a good evening, night, whatever. And we'll meet again on the Das Nostalgia podcast.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.